Welcome to Grenfell Stories, a series of podcasts commemorating the Grenfell fire tragedy in which 72 people lost their lives and many, many more were affected. My name is Craig Hanlon-Smith and I'm the North Kensington Centre Principal of Morley College, London. The community of North Kensington is as vivacious as it is diverse, with a rich cultural, political and social history. And it is this idea of community that we will be focusing upon in these podcast interviews with community members past, present and future. We aim to celebrate the community and indeed to look to the future and to look forward with hope. Hello and welcome to Morley Radio, coming to you from the newly created North Kensington Centre radio studio, which is terrific to see we're moving forward in that way. The whole three centres now have their own radio studio, which is great to see. And my guest this afternoon is somebody who's very familiar with our local area, and we'll find out quite a bit more about him today. It's Faisal Metalsi. Hello, Faisal.
Hi, Craig.
Thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Could we just have an introduction to yourself in terms of the local area and how long you've lived here, what your personal links are to this area of North Kensington?
So I've lived in North Kensington all of my life. I was born in Harrow Road, but lived on Ladbroke Grove. So straight from the hospital to Ladbroke Grove. And I've lived here forever, for my whole life. I haven't lived anywhere else. It's an amazing place to live. I love the diversity of the area, the different cultures, the different communities that are, kind of linked together within one community. I don't think I know of another area that's as kind of vibrant and diverse as the North Kensington community. So in terms of background, my background is around kind of technology, skills, media, stuff like that.
Great. Good to meet you, and great to hear someone so committed to the area. This is coming from somebody who moved 300 miles away from where he was born. I would also like to talk to you a little bit about why we're here today. So this is our Grenfell Stories Part 3, which we started last year. And one of the Grenfell stories was shared by Moira Samuels. And it's Moira Samuels that introduced you to me. Moira, of course, is now a college governor, and also she lives locally and is very active locally. And she was telling me a story about your involvement directly in the community following the Grenfell tragedy. And she was describing how she remembered you being everywhere with your camera phone, and you were recording the sort of what was happening in the days after that. Could you share some of that with us?
The day of the fire, I was actually at home working on a separate business, a completely separate business from what I ended up doing. So the business I was working on was a kind of a food-based business. And I remember working really, really late on that night until about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was shattered because it'd been a really busy, couple of months trying to get the business up and running. And I remember at about 2 a.m., I decided that it was time to, to stop for the day and get some sleep. And then I remember seeing lights outside my window, kind of emergency service lights outside the window. And I went to the window, I had a look, and I saw ambulances kind of lined up on my street. So just to put it in kind of, context, I live maybe 100 meters away from Grenfell Tower. So I can see the tower from my window. But on that particular evening, I had the blinds kind of halfway down and I didn't look up. Had I have looked up, I would have seen that, the devastation that had been happening at that time. So I didn't think anything of it because, in North Kensington, you hear, sirens and lights going off all the time. That's not to say that, it's a dangerous area. It just happens. We live in an urban area. So I went to sleep and I didn't think anything of that. And then I started getting phone calls and I could hear the phone ringing and then kind of, stopping and then ringing and then stopping. And so the last phone call that I received was about 4 o'clock in the morning. So I decided to answer it because, it had been ringing all night. And I saw a message from a friend of mine who'd asked if I was okay, did I know what was going on? And I didn't, you know, I was still quite sleepy. So she said to me, you know, you need to turn the TV on. So I turned the TV on, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. So, you know, to look outside my window, I would have seen Grenfell, but to watch what was happening, you know, on television was surreal. So I quickly got dressed and walked outside, and it was like, it was kind of like pandemonium in the local streets. There were people everywhere. My neighbors were outside. You know, I think everybody was really, it was an unbelievable sight. Nobody could really believe what was going on. And so I wanted to take a closer look. So where we live at the, on the Lancaster West Estate, there are some green areas that kind of separate the three walkways. And so my neighbor said, look, let's go and have a look and see, you know, let's get closer to what's going on. So we went to the walkway between Hurstway and Testerton, and it was unbelievable. I still couldn't believe what was going on. So we stood there for, it must have been about 20 minutes watching the tower ablaze, not comprehending what we were looking at. And then I kind of came to. This would have been about 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, after, you know, meeting with lots of friends and neighbors and stuff like that. And then about that time, I wanted to do more. I wanted to help. As with everybody else in the local community, people came out and you know, wanted to help our neighbors and, yeah, and our community.
Of course.
So I went up to Al Manar, which is a kind of an Islamic cultural center up on Acklam, to see what I could do. And they were basically, there were so many people there collecting. Donations were coming, had started coming in from all over the country to help support, you know, those that had lost, you know, their flats and everything. And so I met with these really amazing guys that had come down from, they'd bought a van from East London to try and help. They'd bought donations from East London, and they wanted to know what they could do. So we started to coordinate between Al Manar and Clement James, which is a church on just by the tower. And so what was coming out at the moment at that time was that there were young kids that needed supplies, so nappies, you know, formula, stuff like that. So we spent the next 2 days running around between all of the organizations in the local area, churches, youth centers, clubs. There was even a space that there was a club on Acklam Road that had started collecting donations. So what we did, we just collected all the stuff that was needed and then took it back to a specific center so they could distribute it. That continued for, I think it was about 3 or 4 days. And then I wanted to do more. I wanted to try and help to do more. And that was when I passed by a news reporter from Channel 4. And I remember thinking to myself, I wonder how, you know, the mainstream media will tell our story in terms of Grenfell. And I wanted it to be, you know, the stories that came from the local community rather than from outside sources. And so, along with six other people who had come from the local area, we started a social news channel called Grenfell Speaks. The idea was, in the early days, was to basically collate all the information that, you know, that had kind of popped up in the local area. So people were offering flats to you know, to people that come out of tower. They were offering them, you know, somewhere to come and eat. There were kind of mental health services. There was, you know, information, lots of information locally. And we wanted to put it in one space. And that's how the channel started. But then it quickly grew to kind of a storytelling platform. And so over the coming weeks and months, we started interviewing local residents. So we started talking to local residents about their stories, about, you know, the impact that it had on them and how they were coping with, you know, with what was going on. So then we started interviewing people. So, and then we started going to meetings. So when RBKC had meetings, you know, to try and to explain what was going on and to kind of offer support, we recorded the meetings. And from there, it moved on to the Silent Walk, which had started a couple of weeks after the fire. So the Silent Walk is basically held once a month. The community come together and walk in silence as a way of protest, as well as you know, as a kind of a healing healing event. So I started recording those, and it just grew. The channel grew from, you know, from all the content that we were putting up constantly. It was daily content. So we were working, I think it was 18-hour days.
Wow.
To try and get all the stories out that were happening in the local area. And that's what I'd been doing for the last 2 years since the fire.
I mean, that's amazing, really, that something sort of organic and instantaneous just came out of out of your response. Have you ever looked at, because of course the Grenfell tragedy and the aftermath really is still in the main media and reporting on the inquiry. Do you ever tune into any of that and listen to how sort of the outside media, if you like, is representing your community?
Yeah, I do, yeah, from time to time, because, you know, work permitting, from time to time I listen to the inquiry and I listen to the stuff that the mainstream media put out and the stories, but it just doesn't feel to me like it's, you know, it's very kind of community centric or community focused. There are so many stories in the local area that still need to be told, and I don't think, and I mean, it's not the fault of the mainstream media. Obviously they have a story to tell and then they have to move on to the next one and next one. They you know, their time is very limited in terms of what they can report on.
Of course.
But I still haven't seen anything that's kind of, that expresses how the community are feeling from the mainstream media, if that makes sense. There's so much still going on. It's still quite a raw, visceral situation locally.
Of course.
And I just think that, you know, even 4 years on, there's still a lot of trauma that people are dealing with, and there's so many stories that need to be told. And also there needs to be a way of expressing these stories in order for us as a community to move on and to heal.
Do you have any initial thoughts about the future of these stories? I mean, it's almost like you're recording a sort of living history, aren't you, really? I mean, as soon as you move on to the next day, yesterday is now history. And you're right, 4 years is a very short space of time in our lives. But as we move on, these stories are going to develop, aren't they? People's individual stories, I would imagine, will change as time moves
on. Yeah. So I would like the channel to continue to tell the stories, to continue to kind of, you know, to follow the lives of the people that have been affected by this really tragic event. Eventually, the channel would sit as an archive for what's happened. But in terms of, you know, moving forward, I would like it to become a space where people can kind of express their or tell their stories in order for them to kind of, For it to be kind of a cathartic way of releasing some of the trauma that you know, that the local community has felt and is still feeling.
And thinking about the future, so you and I are working together a little bit at the moment at the North Kensington Centre at Morley College. And the conversations that you and I have had, you've always been very, very positive about the future and about the community and about what we can do together at the centre. How would you see somewhere like Morley College, North Kensington, supporting the community in moving forward? What kind of a role do you think we can play?
So after the fire, as well as the volunteering and the community support and the, you know, the community coming together to kind of help each other out in a time of stress, we also saw a lot of community members become kind of politically active, not in the sense that, you know, the shouty politically active, but they wanted to be involved in the future of our community, to be able to have a voice, to be able to have their say in terms of how we move forward as a community. Because historically, that hasn't been the case. It's been, you know, there's been a lot of anger and mistrust between the community and the local authority. And what I've seen is that there are so many amazing people in the local area have been involved in trying to kind of move us forward in a positive way. So that's either setting up new initiatives, setting up local groups, setting up, you know, community interest companies to help support people through mental health, through art therapy, through creative arts. So for me, I see Morley College as a space where we can develop these ideas in terms of the community, to give the community the support that they need to be able to be engaged and involved in the local area to create something positive out of this really tragic event.
And specifically, you're very keen on digital development and digital skills and,
I am,
and,
that, yeah.
and the sort of tech of the area,
yeah,
really, and what the infinite possibilities are with, I guess, infinite possibilities in everybody to develop their digital skills. Tell us a bit more about that.
So we can't deny that we live in a digital age. And if we don't have the skills as community members or citizens to be able to engage in the digital world, we'll get left behind. So one of my passions is to try to, you know, upskill as many people as possible in the world that we live in by giving them the tools that they need to be able to develop themselves and to also develop the local area. In, you know, how can we use technology to support people moving forward in terms of jobs, in terms of, you know, community activism, creativity. So future skilling the local community to be able to kind of get involved in redesigning and re-envisioning the local community. So everything from basic digital skills, we talked about, you know, 3D printing, virtual reality, for example, you know, how do we use technology for sustainability, all of this kind of stuff.
And this is not age limited either, is it? Isn't it? This isn't just about young people. This is about the whole spectrum of everybody who will need digital skills from this day forward, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not, you know, it's not age specific. I think that everybody needs to learn digital skills in the world that we live in. Otherwise, we get left behind. I mean, you know, I'm not, you know, as young as I used to be. But I just think that there are people out there who find, you know, working with digital devices or working on the internet, they find it quite difficult. So my wish is to try and help and support, you know, people of all ages to be comfortable in being able to use, you know, digital devices or learn digital skills moving forward.
So in addition to the tragedy of Grenfell, and of course, within 2.5 years of that tragedy, we then all entered sort of a shared experience of this international, worldwide pandemic. What have you learned during the last sort of 14, 15 months during this pandemic, this shared experience? What have you personally, Faisal, learned, do you think?
For me personally, I learned that connection is the most important thing. You know, we haven't been able to connect as a community like we did in, you know, before the pandemic. I think that's really, really important. I think it's also, it's very important for one's mental health to be able to kind of integrate, to be able to come back and to kind of connect locally with the people that, you know, that we used to connect with before. So for me personally, it's about that human connection. It's about being able to kind of come out and talk to people again and to, you know, to hear people's stories and to try to kind of, you know, listen to you know, what people have been going through and to try and come together to you know, to continue the work that we were doing before the pandemic hit.
I mean, some of what you were talking about at the beginning of this conversation around not just locally, but people turning up in a truck from East London and all these people suddenly coming together, but yes, locally as well, of course, and people being very proactive and undertaking practical activities to support people who were immediately in need. Have you seen that during the pandemic as well? Has that been something that
I have, I have. I've seen that there are so many amazing organizations, you know, started by local people to help support people in terms of, you know, food banks, support for mental health services, art therapy, creative skills. A lot of them have been done online, but, you know, but that's because, you know, we were forced to kind of push everything online during the pandemic. But that hasn't stopped. There are so many different, you know, amazing people and organizations in the local area helping support local community members to move forward or to at least just to keep them connected to the local community through, as I said, food banks, through skills-based learning online, through creative skills.
And is there anything you think that we should collectively, as a broader community, take from this pandemic? I'm really mindful of your positivity and forward thinking every time I speak to you.
Thank you.
And I guess also coming out of the tragedy of Grenfell, but also coming out of the pandemic, what do you think that we can collectively take from this shared experience, which, let's face it, some people have found very, very difficult. Some people have you know, not been working. I mean, being furloughed is kind of a nice thing in that you might still have a job, but just being sent home and not with anything to do for a long period of time, that can be really, really challenging for people. So what positively do you think that we can take out of this shared experience?
For me personally, I think it's just about more empathy towards people, towards what people are going through. I think it's, you know, having these conversations, remembering that, you know, that we're all, you know, we've all been in a vulnerable state for a very long time, coming together, trying to come together to help support each other in just even having conversations, even asking, you know, your neighbor, you know, how they feel, or checking in on your neighbor to see whether they need something. So for me, it's about building these connections again, coming out, you know, slowly to build these connections and to listen to each other, to see how we can support each other like we've been doing for the last 4 years.
I think that's great. And the empathy is obviously really, really important, but it's because people's responses, I've noticed, they change, don't they? So somebody might have a really strong couple of weeks, like they seem to be absolutely fine, but then actually it can completely change their perspective on what's happening, which might be around employment security, or they may get a message from the track and trace app that says you must now self-isolate, so now they've got to go back inside. It's shifting sands all the time, really.
I mean, nobody really knows what's going on at the moment. We're still not 100% sure whether, you know, everything's okay. And I mean, being stuck at home for almost 15 months is going to have a really kind of, you know, negative impact on one's mental health. And for me, what helps me is just talking to people, just to be able to kind of have conversations with people and understand that we're all going through something similar. And it's not just in the local community, but it's wider. But just, you know, just being able to talk to people, to show empathy, to understand that, you know, it's sometimes you have good days and you have bad days. And just having these discussions moving forward, that has helped me a lot in the last 15 months.
And I guess this is where your sort of skills base and digital skills and technical skills all kind of come in as well. I know just meeting online is not the same and it's not everything, but an ability to do that can make a big difference, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So at Morley, and specifically in Warnington Road, North Kensington, we are entering a new phase with the building because our scaffolding is now going up and the renovation to the centre.
I've seen that, yeah.
Renovation to the centre is starting. What are your hopes for this centre? So cut to 3 years from now, what do you hope to see or experience at Morley College, North Kensington?
My hope is that, you know, Morley College continues to be the kind of community college that it was in the past, you know, where people can come in and learn lifelong skills, for example, you know, a place where, because I did quite a lot of courses in when it was Warnington back in the day. I'd love to see as a community college, as it was before, as I said, where people can learn the skills that they need to kind of move forward in their lives, and also to have, you know, the opportunity to be able to support this really, really amazing, vibrant community.
That's great, Faisal. And it's great to have you on board advising us and working with us with all of your local knowledge and your technical digital skills knowledge towards that aim. Because I agree, and I've got the same intention, really, for the centre, for it to support people, all people, whoever comes to work and indeed study at the college, to make a difference to their lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity, Craig.
Faisal, thank you for talking to us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.